Hello and welcome to The Ether. Today is Friday, December 3rd, 2021. This is Salvation, Saving Grace. One of our Twitter friends hit us up and said, "Hey, I noticed you only caught 40 minutes of that Twitter space hosted by CeFi the other day." And I was like, "Yes, yes indeed. I've brought great shame to my name and my dynasty." And they said, "Fear not, sir. I recorded most of it," and they sent me this 4 gig wave file, and I re-encoded it and cleaned it up, and here we go. Thank you so much. I should have had their name in front of me, but you know who you are. You're my guardian angel, and you will now be expected to record for backup for me all the time now. For real, though, thank you.
Without being, like, super risky either. Because the cool thing about Nexus is, if you think about it, like, they automatically manage your LTV, like, to keep it at, what is it, 45, or, you know, somewhere between 45 and 60%, which is kind of cool. But they're right now just parking an earn section, which actually doesn't even earn you as much as, like, just Bonded Luna sitting there sometimes. Like, if I wasn't interested in earning more Psi token, I wouldn't even... it's not even the most efficient thing to do, but I'm curious about I'm really curious about how the if they can actually build vaults and such that do this better, and maybe, like, so in other words, while the money's waiting there, it's sitting in earn, but then, like, when Luna's price drops, it can buy you Luna on the way down or something like that. Would be a low risk way to buy Luna for newbies, because, like, the inability to sort of do a dollar cost average in an automated fashion, it seems like that's, like, one of the most core functions of DeFi. Like, it's pretty simple to program, I would imagine. But anyway, let's see. How do you say your name, by the way? It's CYAK, Cyak, or Cyak, like,
yes, Cyak's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah,
Cyak. Okay, just making sure I got you. Yeah.
Yeah. Good morning. Hope everyone's doing well. I kind of answered my first question, which was just, like, what are the not newbies, but necessarily, like, what's everybody telling their family or their friends and stuff who are able to grasp, you know, most of cryptocurrency, maybe not all the Pylon and Gateway and that kind of stuff, but you know, they grasp Anchor Protocol and they get, you know, and they want to do more, and they're, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, so what's everybody, like, kind of teaching, you know, to the, you know, sort of layman, but not, you know, middle of the pack guys who are willing to learn. Like, people like my father who can grasp, yeah, you know, some of the harder stuff, but doesn't want to, you know, get too intricate with it. So is the white whale maybe the path that you would lead him on, or Stoddard Labs, where it's kind of just set it, forget it, but it's maximizing output?
Yeah, the simplest thing for the person who just doesn't want to touch their shit is just have him get on, like, Skater or something, Auto Compound. So I have at least a couple of family members. I just walked them through hopping onto Skater and just Auto Compound their Luna. Because, you know, they're not that interested in, like, messing with it. And what Stator is essentially doing, if you think about it, is taking your yield and it's dollar cost averaging the UST that comes out of that into more Luna. So that's the closest thing we have to an automated system now for Luna accumulation. And, you know, I sort of inform family and friends, too, if they're getting into something new, like if you're going to buy Luna today at $70 or whatever, then you should be prepared to buy some at 60, 50, 40, and 30, yeah, you know, just like I've described before. Like this idea that somehow you're going to pick the perfect price, unless they're just like a fire and forget investor. They don't give a shit. And they're like, I want to throw some money at this and I'm going to let this ride for a number of years. I can, that's fine too. Cause when you're auto compounding, you're essentially mitigating your downside, yeah, risk. But I think there's, like, you don't want to, me personally, I don't feel like I should miss the opportunity of a dip, right? Like, it doesn't make sense time wise to like ride a coin down, but not take some advantage of the fact that the price is down. You know, one way people deal with that is by shorting things. The problem is, if I knew exactly when to short or long something, I'd just simply do that. Like, since I don't feel like I'm capable of knowing that, you know, predicting the future, and I don't really want to do a whole bunch of risk management and stop losses and shit. Like, it's much more simple. The simplicity is to just simply buy more when something goes down and to have capital available when I to do so. And with Stator, the cool thing is, like, technically you're getting Luna at a lower price, I guess, when you're auto compounding, because it's a lot of the yield in is currently coming in UST. So when it's buying Luna, you're getting theoretically more Luna as the price drops, I would think. So yeah, as a proportion of your yield. So that could be pretty good.
That all makes sense.
So that I think is that's the newbie choice, I think, now is Stator is now the
gotcha. I wasn't sure if if White Whale was for Luna a little more optimal or what you guys were kind of doing.
Well, White Whale as in like waiting for the coin offering to come out and then like participate in that, or are you talking about like doing the Pylon Gateway and like going that
route? Probably
it's on Pylon.
Yeah, probably the ICO and go stuff ahead, like sorry. That. So I know some of them are trying to get into the more intricate stuff, but my other question that I had, this was a little more convoluted though, and I know we talked about it a few times on Stock Twits, but I've been dabbling with the idea of like a health insurance cryptocurrency, and I've been talking to a lot of doctors and other people who actually want to invest seed money because this started out as an idea and now it's kind of blossomed into something actually real. So I don't.
Yeah, that's kind of an interest area of mine as well. I've kind of mentioned that too. It's like, it's a massive addressable
market. Yeah, it really is. And I mean, after working with insurance for a couple of years and stuff and seeing it front on both sides of the front line of medicine, and then on the other side of having to, you know, charge and deal with it and watching how much it controls, I just feel like in the way that Anchor's set up, it's almost like, why couldn't we do that with a health insurance where the smart contract triggers, right? And it somebody puts in money into their HSA account and then that earns interest. And if they're basically rewarded for being healthy, you know, it doesn't pull from that, or it doesn't trigger the smart contract. If anything, they earn interest on their health. And then if they're sick, it pulls from the fund or whatever, or some smart contract triggers and something along those lines.
Yeah, the mechanics of it is what would have to be worked out, but like it wouldn't be that different than, like, say for example, a bond essentially, because like imagine if you took out a policy today on like of health insurance, if something happened to you today, right? Theoretically that money would have to be available the moment you have that insurance. So there'd have to be a pool of money, a liquidity pool for paying out for these things. And then, like, if you want to do it in a decentralized way, there would have to be some method where, like, you know, it's essentially a tokenomics situation where you would not have to prove that the money that you're using that you plugged in is necessarily for health insurance.
Yeah.
So, because, like, how would you prove all this shit? So the reality is, I think maybe what you and I are thinking of is actually what's happening with Mars Protocol in some ways. Because, like, Mars is essentially a under collateralized borrowing, and assuming you have a sizable enough pool in there, then theoretically you can borrow off relatively small amounts of money. The punishment would have to be high for misusing the system, though. That's where the collateral piece comes in. And how do you actually generate that without a third party that confirms that, you know, you had a colonoscopy or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Or
you're jumping into the regulations of, you know, of government and stuff like that, and how much they're involved with insurances and stuff. So,
Yeah, I'm thinking of it from the perspective of, like, if we build something like that, it would be, like, you wouldn't even have, you wouldn't even call it health insurance.
No, you wouldn't, no.
It would just literally be, like, it would just be a tokenomics system that essentially favors that particular use case.
Yeah, I was thinking of anything, it'd be like
a
Roth IRA, like, hybrid HSA account, almost, where it's just, like, it's dual, almost, where it's kind of a retirement, but it's also your health insurance, kind of, and where rewards you for both, right? So, and you can just basically every month you're paying into it.
My global theory for this would be, like, if I have a insurance policy, or not insurance policy, like a crypto contract, let's say, or a smart contract. And like, if I never use my health insurance because I never get sick, that I could theoretically pass that on to my child as a basically fungible asset. So, you know, it might be that there are like both fungible components, like the portion that you can pass on to your children, and maybe almost like NFT or non-fungible components, like things that you buy in that system that affords you the ability to do like that basically allow you to buy like specific services, but they're not transferable or something like that, you know? So I don't know. There's some probably mix of tokenomics that goes into that, but you probably don't have to call it insurance at all. It would just simply have to, I mean, essentially, if you think about what health insurance is, it's the access of money that you don't have in an under-collateralized situation, a pool somewhere. It's almost like a DAO, essentially.
That's what I thought, too, right? It's like, you know, Geico and others, they all have this large liquidity fund or this pool where they're basically just using it, just like Starbucks, to increase the, you know, the net value of the fund. And that's when they pull from it when they need, you know, money to pay for all of our, you know, and all of our health. And obviously, it's extremely efficient, and it's extremely, you know, makes them a lot of money because they're able to pull from it.
But the big difference between like what Geico would do, for example, and what like a smart contract based system would do, though, is that if you think about how Anchor works, right? Like, so you're over collateralized in the overall system. You have yield bearing assets generating essentially revenue, right? So, and then you don't have shareholders except for maybe the coin holder of the so-called healthcare token. But let's say only like, you know, 1% or 0.5% of all of the fees go into that, the value accrual mechanism of the token. So unlike a health insurance, I don't know what the current margins are in a health insurance company, but I would imagine they're probably 4 or 5%.
Yeah,
right?
they're a bit higher than other places. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So like there's an element of that, and, you know, you could also have like some kind of lottery system for like malpractice slash legal events too. There's a whole nother scheme that you could create in the mix. Cause if you have enough funding, you could like fund different pools of things for stuff. And I think the idea is like building a system like that, you'd almost, you'd want to have it like some system where it's trustless. So therefore it has nothing to do with health at all. Like literally it's just
a fund almost. So, just a slush fund. It can be used for, I guess, any insurances technically, or whatever you want to use it for, right?
Yeah, exactly. You could almost use it for anything. It just would be a matter of funding it properly and figuring out ways to avoid.
Like, and I don't know any of the blockchain intricacies. I've been trying to read what I can online and stuff, but I feel like I needed to actually sit down with some blockchain specialist people or people who have an actual good idea what they're talking about, because now these people are actually...
It's not that different from the dApps you're already using. You just pretty much have to use your imagination and see how to use those Lego blocks to some extent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, you know, because you're talking about like revenue, you're talking about cash flow, you're talking about borrowing, you're talking about lending. You know, you're like, look at what Loterra for lottery does and that kind of thing, right? Like, there's nothing specific about insurance that couldn't be like built. The only like little chink in the armor is going to be like, what is the mechanism for preventing abuse in that system of whatever. So, hey, Walter, what's up? He had his hand up. Let me see if he has any questions. We're just talking just like ideas here, by the way, not necessarily in that, that wasn't about Terra specifically. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Kind of sidetracked.
Yeah, it's cool. Hey, hope you're doing well, and hope everyone else is doing well as well. So I mentioned before, the first time I spoke to you, that when Luna hits like 200, 250, I want to swap it into USD, and then the reward I'll get off there, the interest I'll then spend on real world things like expenses and stuff. I actually found out recently that if you just bond your Luna and keep it in your Terra Station wallet, you get 10% APY paid out in Anchor as in USD, right? That's correct, isn't it?
That's correct, yes. So in that instance, you would be making the UST yield, but you wouldn't be auto compounding into more Luna necessarily.
Yeah, that's it.
Like, so versus what Stater does.
Yeah, I'll still have the price exposure of Luna because I believe it will go up. And the difference between that, you know, the 19.5% and the 10% I'll get, like Luna will go up higher than 9.5%. They can't make the difference anyway. Is there a better way of doing, like, I want UST and I want to spend UST, but I don't want to exit Luna or sell any of my Luna. So for what I want to do, is that the best method then? Just keep
Maybe, but like then you're foregoing your airdrops, right? So like if you just simply wanted a simple stake solution where you want to extract cash whenever you feel like it, probably the simplest thing to do is just do the actual just regular staking. You know, maybe stake with even the airdrop validators like Orion or something that give you some extra airdrops, and then just like you can sell your airdrops whenever you feel like, also, like that's an option. Because BLUNA, the problem is it just you don't keep your staking. I mean, you don't keep your airdrops, right? So depending on how important those are to you, they add usually an extra couple of percentage of yield onto the typical yield. So it's just simple staking maybe what you're looking for, perhaps.
Yeah, then I can swap the rewards into UST if I want. I mean, ideally, I want to build up my Luna. I don't think I'll spend all that money anyway, so I could do that. But yeah, like recently I found out about the arbitrage opportunity of swapping to BLUNA and then swapping back. I actually did that and gained like close to 50 Luna actually doing that, which is insane. I love the world.
Right.
I'm so happy that I'm not.
Well, you see why, like, I don't think you have, if you're patient, you don't necessarily have to sell your Luna because you have so many ways to like make some extra percentages here and there that it like mitigates the turbulence of the actual price volatility, right? Like if you're making over the course of a year, you've made like, let's say an extra 10 or 20% Luna, just even on swaps and things, then that's a huge mitigation of volatility on its own. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks again, man. I really appreciate everything you do on here. It's a bit of a mic, like with all this stuff, to be honest with you. Like, there's so much opportunity. I really like Stada. I can't wait for the liquid staking. And like when you answered my question initially about my exit plan and your thoughts on it, like luckily we have, is it Terra Spaces, the guy that's you know, recording everything? Like I listened back to your answer like at least 4 or 5 times.
Like, is it some of some of those conversations have been pretty complicated. Sorry.
No, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, let me get Luna Rick on. He was kind of waiting for a bit.
Hey, Harry.
What's going on, man? Good.
Yeah, just quickly back to King's question. Have you thrown Kuji into the mix yet when it comes to, you know, accumulating Luna and BLUNA and then even, you know, using that BLUNA towards, you know, an LP for the Astroport?
Yeah, like there's plenty of people that are certainly playing the Kujira game right now, and it's a fairly, like, I would say, conservative way to buy yourself some Luna. Because basically, when is Kujira most likely going to trigger a liquidation where you get a benefit from it? It's most likely going to happen when prices are falling, right? So to some extent, what's going to happen is you're going to, like, let's say, you know, before it even triggers one of your orders, let's say Luna has to fall like 5%. So you've already, it's like almost like putting a limit order in 5% lower than the current price. But then you add to that the fact that you're getting like a discount off your Luna, maybe another, let's say 3%. There is a fee for Kujira. So you don't want to do like 1% or 2%. I think most people park there like 3% or more as far as the discount that you're willing to tolerate. But if you get like an extra like 3% discount on your price, in addition to the fact that like when the trigger of that order happens, you've probably already dropped a few percentage points. You might get like at any given moment, you might be getting Luna at a price that is like, you know, 5 to 6% cheaper. So like, again, this is like what I'd like to see some of the automations on Terra do is like build on top of these things. So like, let's say you have a Nexus vault, for example, you know, and it's taking the rewards you're getting from your anchor earn, and it's basically just putting in orders on Kujira automatically, for example. That'd be cool shit, right? Like, you're basically just getting the cheapest possible Luna in any given day, and you just let the thing ride, and it just earns you Luna forever. So these things can be really magical as far as, and super lucrative if you think about it. And you're always optimizing on the lowest price, so you're always happy, you know.
And what would you do with that BLUNA that you get from Kujira?
Well, I mean,
there's tons of options, but you personally, if you're in this market right
now. Yeah. Well, for starters, like I might, like if I don't have a borrowing need at that moment, then I might just take that bonded Luna and just put it in anchor bond to burn it, you know, over 21 days, which I have like some of that burning right now. And what that means is you're essentially unstaking it. It's like the word burn is kind of another word for unstaked bonded Luna, really. But you can do it in the anchor burn bond section if you look at that tab, and you then claim it after 21 days or so. And then you can do the Luna, it'll convert it back to Luna, and then you can do the bonded Uniswap again and get an extra 1 or 2%. So notice how, like, if you're using Kajira and you're saving yourself on a buy, let's say you're saving yourself somewhere between 5 to 7%, you're buying cheaper Luna, and then you're getting another 1 or 2% free Luna because you're converting it from Luna to bonded Luna again. Like, you know, over the course of, I don't know, 3 months or so, you could mitigate a substantial portion of the price volatility that you face in buying Luna. So it can be very efficient in terms of you getting nice prices on it. Does this all make sense
here? Yeah, it makes tons of sense. Hopefully we see more automations. That'd be great.
Yeah, the more automations to me, like imagine if Kujira took the bonded Luna you had, like borrowed off of it and put a series of orders in there for you, because you just want to take all the bonded Luna you got and you want to take the, let's say, the yield off of it and automatically buy more positions on Kujira or something, right? Like you just let that ride for years, right? Like just keeps buying you cheap Luna forever. That would be pretty sweet. Very, very efficient. And like, it's not what the newbie on Coinbase is doing when they're buying, you know, or whatever, you know, they're not getting all these benefits that like you and I are seeing. By like understanding the background functions of all this. So yeah, it can be pretty, pretty cool. Like, in terms of, just permutations of shit you can do. Hey, Blockpill, what's up?
Hey, what's up, C5? Been a bit, but, just had a question on, what your strategy was for the Astroport lock drops and just, yeah, I guess just what your strategy is, what you think is the best for staking in terms of like what's going to give you, you know, some of the higher returns and some of the LPs, as well as the returns that you're getting from the Astroport tokens.
Yeah, well, for starters, because Astroport is a incentivized LP, which is a little bit different than like the TerraSwap, which we've had so far. This is going to be a much more robust basically just a much more robust system in general that you can theoretically also see apps getting built on top of it. But so I'm super bullish on the token and the idea behind it. And so I am interested in getting as much of the Astro token as possible with these lock drops. At the same time, like, you know, if you throw a massive amount of money at LPs in an attempt to get like the Astro token, you know, let's assume that the Astro token is going to 10x or something after its, you know, lock drop is completed. Like, why do I say 10x? Because that's more or less what some of the other coins have done, like Kujira, and actually I think it more than 10x. So I'm just using that as a reference point. So if you'd use that as a reference point, say, okay, like how much Astro token am I going to get to potentially take the risk of like the LP that I'm entering. So for starters, like if you don't like the risk profile of an LP just in general, for whatever reason, like you don't want to suffer from some impermanent loss from an LP, you need to think about that like separate from like farming the actual Astro token. Having said that, the actual APY, when you think about if the Astro token that you get 10x is like it happened with Apollo DAO, is it could work out really well for you. Because if you pick a relatively low risk LP and you farm the Astro token and it goes up, well, that was sort of the whole point. Like it's a community farming event. You're basically using the system to get more the Astro that you would otherwise get if you use a system when it goes live. And they're trying to get you to sort of like lock in a period of LP. So the ones I was thinking of doing are the ones based on the coins I've gotten for free anyway. Like I've gotten Anchor for borrowing, I've gotten Psy for using their ecosystem with Nexus, and I happen to have, what was the other one I had? It's pretty easy to enter like the Luna, bonded Luna pair, because most of us have some Luna or bonded Luna around. Those three, I think, are a good start. Like if you already have LPs sitting in, like for example, Spectrum, you can get them out of there. So I've removed some of my stuff from Spectrum and Apollo DAO for right now, and I can basically migrate those over to Astroport. You can take LPs that you have in TerraSwap, like that you've already created, and you can migrate those over if you'd like. And then the other strategy would be like, if there's a lot of people that leave the Luna bonded Luna pool, you might end up having wildly high APR or really good Luna to bonded Luna swap ratios or discounts. That's quite interesting as well. But so that's kind of my master strategy, is like those three pools. But that just happens to be because those are the tokens that I sort of like happen to own the coin, and form a new LP to. So I'm looking to sort of get as much Astra token as I can, but realizing that like there's other coins coming out very soon too. So the problem is, if you lock into these lock drops, we need to look at like what the lock drop time rules are. I didn't review that too carefully, but I want to be sure that I have additional capital for entry into like Prism and White Whale, and like those look like really, really great projects too, obviously. So deciding like which of these to go into, which one's going to go up the most and all that's going to be tough. So, you know, is anyone going to tell you, oh yeah, your highest gains or whatever are going to be in X, Y, or Z coin? No. So I'm going to do a little bit of each personally. And, you know, I don't, these coins, like when you get these like ICO level events, you're getting these things at such a cheap price that I don't really plan on selling the coins in these various systems. Like Astroport's token, if you listen to Macedo's discussion yesterday, like is going to have a lot of utility within that system. And there's going to be a lot of reasons why the token price is going to go up. Like if you understand what Delphi Digital does, they figure out how to make token prices go up for a job. Like that's what they do. So I think it's if any coins I'm going to like never sell, it might be things that I get in, you know, like never sell ever would be some of those kinds of things like Orion and Astro and Mars and such. Like I think, you know, like these are kinds of things that they have planned out. If you listen to what Jose said, basically he's talking about the way that tokenomics works for some of these is for people that are really interested in participating over like a 2 to 4 year time frame. And I think these things, this again, not really a financial advice, it's just my personal sense of it. I think over a 4 year time frame, these things are going to be extraordinarily lucrative, like not even a little bit, but a lot bit. And so that's my belief in those and my conviction in them. So that's why I really was glad to be able to get Jose online and like chat with him directly, because I'm not sure I fully understood what the hell was going on either. But he was able to really explain with a high degree of clarity yesterday. So if some of you haven't listened to that conversation, one of the guys recorded it and like posted it somewhere, I think on terraspaces.org, I think. We really got into it pretty deep, and it was worth. And remember, Astroport's coming out like on the 5th, so it's time to do your research now if you want to know what's going on. But like, imagine if you had been, if you understood like what, in other words, this is like getting into like Curve or, you know, some of these other big DEXs as an early entrant. Like, it won't be any better time than now to be involved with some of these projects, right? Like, you know, and if Terra is going to be as big as we think it is, like these could actually be. Astroport and some of these projects could be actually considerably bigger than the historical projects that you think of on Ethereum and such. I wouldn't underestimate over a 4 or 5 year time frame the magnitude of these things. Don't like I think these are not the tokens you trade away because you made a quick gain. It's just a bad idea to me. Like again, not specific financial advice. Do whatever the hell you want. But like if you're asking what I'm doing, like. These are not the ones I'm going to play games trading or whatever. There's a bunch of shit coins on KuCoin or whatever you can trade on, or you know what I mean. Like there are things you trade and there's things you hold forever. In my opinion, and especially if you look at like some of the when you look at the early growth and then also some of the staking yields and whatnot that are going to be in the tokenomics of these projects, like they can be extraordinarily lucrative if you compare. Like let's say you have a staking yield that's 10%. And you're getting the coin for a nickel, and you know the price of the coin goes to $1, and the staking yield is proportional. Like you may like 20x your staking yield, like output. So there may be no reason whatsoever to like get rid of these things, because like when else are you going to get them at these prices, right? So I think allocate my strategy is I'm going to allocate as much as I can to acquire these things in some proportion of the various new ICOs, especially these really, really strong blue chip ones. And I'm going to sort of make a decision to like put an amount that I think I can hold on to those rewards forever. Like that's what I plan on doing with Apollo DAO and some of the other ones that came out and community farmed recently. Stater, a community farm is going on right now. That's a good example. I think you're getting those early tokens with the idea that you're getting like not venture capital level pricing, but like right after, you know, like you're basically the initial, it's like a, almost like an initial stock offering level prices. And, you know, a small amount, you know, let's say you, that you acquire in that could be like 100x, you know, type of thing, or 200x or more, or 1000x really over a, you know, 4 or 5 year time frame, especially when these are listed on centralized exchanges, if they get much bigger. So that's my thought on it. Like, I think something to really keep in mind. Like after, and another thing to keep in mind is remember, look, think about how much research it takes you to learn all this shit, right? Like you figure all this stuff out to what? Trade something for a minor gain? Like if anything, your time that you spent learning how to figure this out is an important element of this. And there's only so many coins or cryptos you're going to get into or whatever, where you're going to have the time to sort this out, figure out this research, and then develop conviction in it and get the timing right to get in early. Because how many ICOs are probably coming out every day around the world? Like, who knows how many, right? But how many of them do you know of? And how many of them do you know of, like, that have good utility and understand the ecosystem they're in? Like, you just won't have the time unless you have, like, a team of people, like, literally buying shit for you. So I think that's how I foresee these Terra projects as really more buy and hold type of things, if possible. Let me get Brian on here. Some of the folks on the speakers list were kind of waiting. I'm going to drop a few speakers just to be able to manage, like, who's who on here. Brian, go ahead. Sometimes these connections are questionable, so we'll see how it goes. And Jason's here too. We'll see if his mic works. Connectivity today has been kind of spotty. Like, I've added people to be speakers and they're falling off the list somehow. Jason, you there? Or Brian? Either one. Sometimes I can't tell if anyone can even hear me. Like, guys, either of you there? Maybe. Either that or they walked away. Let me see if Share Wizard's here. It happens. We go on and on, and people go off to do different shit.
Also,
Share Wizard, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Good to be with you again, CFI. Appreciate this.
Yeah, what's up?
First of all, I could definitely go into the weeds on this short term and what the next month or two is going to be like for, you know, all of us Lunar holders. And you just don't feel like you have enough to allocate. And, you know, I know you, it sounds like you and Danku, I see on this, shout out to you. Just want to kind of get your hands on most of the projects as IDOs, like, cause this could be a great opportunity. And then kind of balance that with the idea of, for me, it's like, man, I don't even know if I can't have it all. My attention, my time is limited. So I kind of get both sides. It's like, where do you want to concentrate versus do you want to just kind of go into things that you're really bullish on? But, there's something else I wanted to bring up that, I think might be valuable, which is in the midterm right now, like you came up with you. I mean, we have an unlimited amount of creative ideas on how to add use cases and composability to these apps. And you kind of had your idea with having automation and bots to, you know, market buy when dips happen. And that's just like one really great use case that like I would love to have. What I see is kind of the bottleneck is there. It's a freaking difficult time to find good Rust developers. Just competitive as hell. And what I wish we talked about when I was saw you had, you know, was here with Doe yesterday, I was like, I wonder what we as a community could be doing to attract, to incubate, to speak to these developers and help them, you know, build on Terra. Because that, to me, mid to long term is going to be, should be the game, incentivizing it and really offering them, you know, what they need to want to build.
It's almost like what you're saying, you know, how do we build like a, almost like a community, like VC committee, almost like where you're basically, cause, you know, because there's a lot of process involved with meeting people, vetting people, yep. taking the Trusting. Time, and you know, there's a lot that goes into sort of what you're essentially saying is forming a company if you really think yep. about it. And I don't know, I've been kind of looking at it from the perspective that like if we hang out in these spaces and we are sort of like pitching ideas to some extent, they, you know, there's definitely developers taking notes. Like I know the folks at Stater, you know, took a lot of notes about ideas of how to, like better use their platform. I know Hyperion who put a little Telegram group together for us for Prism was taking notes on like our theories. And actually a lot of the, you know, ideas that I know Danku and I and others have like posted there for him, like he'd already considered and figured those out. Like, you know, they're super mm-hmm. sharp already. So some of these things are coming already. And I think you'll be impressed over the next few months with all the neat things that emerge. A lot of these new projects have been waiting for Astroport to be released because there are elements of Astroport needed to really properly like deploy those projects, whether it's like some of, I think Prism is waiting on Astroport and such. So just be aware that some of these things are coming and the real like creative composability things will be a lot more, like there'll be a much more of building blocks within like the next 3-4 months probably, where like all these ideas we're talking when Sayak and I were chatting about like developing like something that would replace, you know, health insurance, for example. When you have all these building blocks, then you kind of can say, okay, like where could we use these different tools? Maybe what are we missing? And a lot of times you don't need like a whole massive amount of Rust development, for example. All you need is like slight tweaks to like systems that are not that complicated. So take, for example, like, the, you know, Prism's, you know, primitives, or take, for example, Stater's liquid token or whatever. Like once you start imagining ways to use those, some of it's just a matter of like sending those messages to, or even having AMAs with the groups that are already building, because they want to build value for their tokens, right? Like don't think for a second Stater doesn't want a lot of cool ideas. Like they're basically getting free ideas from us, right? Like we're just basically crowdsourcing. I mean, I think if you want to monetize the idea, that's a very different thing. Like if you're trying to get, you're trying to monetize it for the community, or you're trying to monetize it in the form of a token that benefits the community specifically, or benefits yourself. Like you want to be a builder. I think anything centralized like that, where you're having to build something and you're trying to make a profit off it, that's a one type of motive. If you're building something with no profit motive, like just the community benefit, and you're just doing it out of the goodness of your heart, or you want to make Terra bigger, those projects could become very big also. But like the existing groups like Stater and Prism or whatever, who have interesting primitives, I think all of those folks are going to want to like increase the utility of those primitives and will be perfectly willing to hear ideas and have been listening to us. Brian, let's see if your mic works a sec. Earlier you were trying to speak and I think it didn't work out for some reason. Brian, you there?
Okay, let's see. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good. Perfect. Go ahead.
This may be a noob question, but I'm just curious, is there any other, I guess the word is cheaper on-ramp for UST? Because right now, I live in Hawaii, so my only option is like crypto.com, and I can buy the native Luna and just move it to my Terra station for like 0.01 Luna tokens and then swap it to UST. But it hurts my heart to just buy Luna to just swap it to UST.
I got you, because there's not a UST available on that platform yet.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah, and your connection's a little plus or minus, so I'll try to get answer some of this. So what we know is that Coinbase has been working on getting UST native onto their platform. Probably crypto.com eventually will, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So that might be an option. A lot of us tend to use KuCoin, so like we'll send like USDT or USDC or something like that over there and make some trading exchanges. Now, you tend to lose a little bit here and there on that too, as far as like mixture of fees and transfer fees and whatnot. Usually USDT is kind of the simplest pair on KuCoin to convert to UST.
Gotcha.
I don't remember if there's a USDC pair on there right now or not, but I think there is. I could be wrong, but check Ooh. That. KuCoin's reasonable. KuCoin's just a functional, useful site anyway, so it's like it's not a bad one to have access to, like when you have to have it. Now, keep in mind, some people this last couple of weeks have been complaining that they've had problems where their like Luna disappeared when they tried to transfer it off KuCoin. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what that's all about, but someone warned me when I bought some Luna there yesterday. They messaged me and they're like, hey, don't try to transfer anything right now, it's all jacked up. So so there's that problem. Right now you can also, by the way, one trick you can use is if you get on Coinbase, you can get wrapped UST, mm-hmm. which is technically on Ethereum, but so it's an Ethereum wallet on Coinbase, but if you send it to KuCoin, there it'll receive wrapped UST okay with using their Ethereum wallet address when you hit the deposit function in mm-hmm. KuCoin. And you can actually send it via wrapped UST, but you can exit KuCoin to your wallet as regular Terra UST. And there's no exchange fee for swapping the two. It's like literally like it's fungible. No. Like the system doesn't know the difference. Does that make
yeah.
sense? You're still going to have like a transfer. UST transfer fees are minor, but wrapped UST, you're basically back on Ethereum fees. So who the hell knows what that is, right? At any given moment. So yeah, there's that headache still a little bit. So that's why I try not to send tiny amounts of money at a time, because the transfer fees eat up. But like, yeah, if you're a smaller investor, it's a real pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Especially when fees are a bigger proportion of your actual money.
Exactly.
Which, you know, like, I mean, that's a legitimate problem for people. So it's you know, I thought already this week, actually late November, I thought they'd actually have a native Terra UST there already, but they do not yet. So. It is what it is. But there's a lot of things coming, like, you know, everything's like that coming soon. And, you know, it's like 100%. Coming soon might be a week or might be a couple of months. Who knows? But it won't take too much longer.
Okay, for sure, man. Thank you.
You might want to check out, by the way, cash.io. I don't know how effective.
I did. So I purchased some UST on Coinbase and, you know, to send it to cash.io. And, you know, I had to pay like 13 UST in fees to get it over to cash.io. So
that didn't make sense either. But what about, you haven't tried connecting cash directly to your bank account, or is that not a thing?
Oh, no, it is a thing, but in Hawaii, I can't for some reason. Hawaii is dumb. It's beautiful. It's dumb.
So Hawaii has weird rules and shit like New York does.
Yeah, very weird rules. It's crazy that they even allow crypto.com, but they do. It's crazy. So
interesting. Yeah. Okay. Danny, what's up?
Hey, how are you? First I wanted to say that Delphi Digital live chat or whatever it was called, that was awesome yesterday. It was just like so much information. Josie was he right off the top of his head. So thank you for doing that.
I'm glad he was able to hop on. I just sort of messaged him and like, hey, can you do this? He's like, sure, why not? I don't know them personally or anything. I just sort of like, they were just gracious enough to just hop on and kind of like speak to everybody. So that's cool.
And it's like, he's so networked, you know, it's about, you know, the vampire thing with Sushi Swap, all these different things that a regular investor wouldn't know unless they were working in the industry.
Exactly. No, like unless you had those particular events, Like you make it, the way he sounds, like it's like he's participated in all those issues and was affected by them in some way.
Oh yeah. And the inside information about TerraSwap, that, you know, and he's like, you know, that team, we kind of, some of us moved over, and that they had time to do a good job on their decks, but really they haven't done much. And which says to me, you know, that the Astro port's going to be awesome.
Yeah. His, like, I guess, like, insider, like, alpha that he poured out yesterday was just, just every 5 minutes was something new.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty sweet.
Could listen to it again. All right. So I have two questions. One's pretty basic. When I create an LP of Anchor and UST and then stake it on Apollo, what is Apollo doing on the back end that they're generating 170% APY for everyone? Well, go ahead.
So keep in mind, so auto compounders is what you're talking about. Apollo DAO and Spectrum are both auto compounders. And really all they're doing is taking the rewards token that you would normally get from LPing. Like, for example, let's just say you went to Mirror and you did an LP of the Apple stock, Mirrored Apple and UST, right? It has a certain APY, like let's say it's 20%. And that APY is paid out in Mirror tokens. So what Apollo DAO does is it basically just takes those Mirror tokens, sells them, and then buys more of the UST / Mirrored Apple position. So it does the same thing that, like, you would do manually, but it does it with every time Mirror's rewards come in, it automatically compounds.
So it does it with riskier.
So when you things? Look at so,
riskier.
No, it's not riskier. It's actually less riskier when you're auto compounding, because essentially you're building your position larger and larger as time goes on. But that APY, and it also mitigates some of the impermanent loss, you know, but you lose some of your Mirror. Well, you're not getting your Mirror, like, rewards direct where you can sell them and do whatever you want with them, right? Like if you wanted to just sell, or you wanted to stake your Mirror rewards, Spectrum Protocol, for example, allows you to pick, like, do you want those rewards to go auto compounding, or you want those to auto stake, which is actually a nice feature too, because that way you don't have to keep staking it manually, right? So some of those features are really nice automations. Now, the APYs, like, they sound really exotic, but that's because that's presuming at an auto compounding rate what your APY would be, assuming that one of two things, assuming that, like, the interest rate for the actual LP pool stays the same over a year, right? And that you kept your position there for a year, right? So, like, if the actual APY of your LP is falling, you know, during that time, which it oftentimes will, these are, like, you know, rewards, inflationary APYs, you can't really go by that number and sit there and go, hey, look, you know, the thing says I get a 50% APY, then you go and calculate how much money you put into your liquidity pool, and then assume that, like, in a year, you're going to have, like, 50% more of your value or whatever, right? Like, it's not that simple. Depending on what happens to the underlying coin in the LP pool and what happens, like, with the price of the and what happens to the actual rewards APY, all of that sort of just is a moving target.
Right. But you're also getting the money on the transactions from creating the LP pair, right, on top of whatever they're giving you in the pool.
Yes, no. Well, yes and no, not really. Because if you look at how Mirror works right now, and I can be wrong about this because it has been a while since I've looked at Mirror, but if you look at the Mirror LPs as an example, they don't have a transactional fee accrual mechanism.
With their LP pair?
At the moment. Yeah, I don't think with the LP pair. Like, you're thinking of, like, what happens on a TerraSwap pair, for example.
Right.
So it depends. Yeah, it depends on the pairing that you're talking about. Exactly.
Okay. So, okay. My second question, if I could. When you're
And by the way, if you're not sure about those LPs, you could probably, like, in other words, are you actually getting transactional value or not? I would definitely message the, like, Apollo people or Spectrum people to kind of clarify that point. It is a good point. it's almost like a point you'd want to know those details right on their site, right?
Right, right. Well, on Anchor, if you, doesn't it show that? No, that's for staking. No, that's staking them. That's not actually creating the pair. Okay, and I was wondering on Anchor, your approach for leveraging when you borrow against your money, do you create LP pairs and then like stake them on Apollo, or do you just try to get more Luna, or do you do a little of both? It just depends. It's a personal thing. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, like if there's like extraordinarily high APYs in a coin that is not particularly that volatile, like let's say for example when Apple Mirror with UST had like 100% APY or something obnoxious, mm-hmm. I felt pretty comfortable borrowing or placing large amounts of UST in that pool, since it's borrowed anyway, and the yield that's coming out from the LP is so much higher, and the impermanent loss is so minor for like, you know, because it's a stock, it's not going to go too right. crazy. Then it works out pretty well, like where your borrow rate is fairly minimal, or at the time we were getting paid to borrow, so it was ridiculous. It paid a lot to borrow, actually. Like sometimes Anchor had like APYs 100% positive, wow. which is insane. So those days are gone. But anyway, the point is, like it depends on the circumstances and which LP you're doing, what's your cost to borrow, what's your opportunity cost if you're borrowing. So I think it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish. Like right now, going to a bunch of LPs is not my particular interest choice unless I'm doing so specific to Astroport. I'm not even too worried about the auto compounder piece of the puzzle because I'd rather just get Apollo tokens at the moment. That's just kind of how I'm doing it right mm-hmm. now. Like the, you know, later might it make sense to kind of have like auto compounders in this process. And the other question is, are we going to be able to place like LPs from Astroport, for example, while earning Astroport coins? Are we going to then be able to go into Spectrum with that? Right. Cause then now you have the auto compounding yields of the LPs mm-hmm. And the rewards. And by the way, this is what on Anchor, if you guys haven't voted, there's a vote in there right now on Anchor that's about one of the votes was migrating the Anchor rewards to Astroport so that like those rewards will actually your Anchor rewards will show up the same way they were, because when you're on Anchor now it's on TerraSwap actually in the background, right? It looks like it's on Anchor's website mm-hmm. or whatever, but it's not, it's actually in TerraSwap. So those Anchor rewards, migrating those to Astroport pools is what you know, one of the things that's happening right now. So that's something, I believe it's still up for vote. But similarly, you'll have a vote for the Mirror rewards going to Astroport, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, then you'd be able to be on Astroport with an LP, take your LP, and then theoretically put that in an auto compounder on Spectrum or Apollo. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to do the same things you do now, in theory, assuming that you get those rewards migrated too.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So there's some things happening there, in the background that need to happen for that to like work correctly.
Right.
We'll okay. see.
Thank you.
We'll see.
Thank you.
No problem. And I don't know that those rewards are all going to be migrated for all the various, coins that are currently in Apollo DAO Spectrum. I don't know that the rewards will be moved all to Astroport so that you could have your LP there and also auto compound it. And then, by the way, there was a couple of protocols, I don't recall which ones off the top of my head, that were not happy with the idea of auto compounders and were trying to put, like, essentially anti-auto compounding code in, you know, in the sense that, like, when what it does is it creates downward pressure on the price of, let's say, Mirror token, because the auto compounder is automatically selling Mirror all the time, right? So it's like a downward spiral to zero or whatever of the Mirror token because it's selling it nonstop in auto compounders, as opposed to people like normally would take their Mirror and maybe some would stake it or some would, you know, like maybe some would sell it. But like in an auto compounder, it's definitely selling all your Mirror. That's how it generates that auto compounded yield.
I see.
So there's some, I don't know, like if future token LPs are going to like allow that, I don't know how that's all going to work.
Yeah, it sort of goes against what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. The auto compounder is sort of like not maybe the best. The fact that you can auto compound is fun for us, but like it's not necessarily the best for the underlying rewards token or what have you in terms of tokenomics is the problem.
Hey, keep up the great work. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Let me get on Be As You Wish To Seem. It's a nice long name. Let's see if his mic works
can
here.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll try. That's actually an aphorism from Socrates. Be as you wish to seem. It's not mine. Anyway, I was trying. I dig a lot through the documentation, but I was never able to find the Luna mission schedule. Does anyone know?
The Luna mission statement?
No, schedule. What is the mission schedule for Luna? Because we have a total supply and a circulating supply. So the difference of the two is Luna that is not being emitted yet, right?
Yeah, you want me to just go over the tokenomics of the Luna UST system briefly for you?
No, I know that if you mint UST, you burn Luna and the opposite. I know that, but I don't understand.
So which emissions are you talking about?
Yeah, like, because as far as I understand, every token has an emission rate, right? Because every so often, some tokens are released on the market.
Gotcha. Well, let me tell you the tokenomics, just generally of Luna. So, like, yeah, let me start with that. So here's how it works. If you go to SmartStake for one, and SmartStake has a page, you know, of supply of Luna.
Yeah, sure.
Essentially, for all practical purposes, you know, there's a starting point of I think it was like a billion Luna. So of course you burn Luna to create UST, and that affects directly the total supply, not necessarily the circulating supply, but first off, it reduces the total supply. So, you know, there is no other mechanism to create more US Luna other than that. There's not an emission involved.
Yeah, no, but
or anything like that. So
if I understand correctly, the difference between the max supply, which is 1 billion, and the total supply, which is 870 million, if I'm not wrong,
right,
is the burn token, right? The burn Luna.
Exactly.
Okay. Then exactly. In those, then you have 380 million or something like circulating supply, 110 of which are liquid supply. So the difference between the two is staked, either in Anchor, either in Terra Station, whatever. So everything that is circulating has been emitted, right? So has been already released. But if I look at at the difference between circulating supply and total supply, which already accounts for the burn token, I get 400 million, around 400 million. And I don't understand if those 400 millions are actually on the market as a supply, or they are held somehow and not yet being emitted. And so they still have to be emitted on the market.
So they're not. It's not a question of emission. They're already held by various groups. So for starters, like you mentioned before, a big chunk of the Luna is staked. And let me mute your mic because you have a lot of sound in there. So I can tell everyone what's going on. So I think what you're asking is like who is available there, number one, to like drop more coins on the market. One is if like people unstake and they sell, that's one place you could have more coins in the market. It only takes technically 21 days to like unstake your Luna. And then with bonded Luna, you could actually swap it theoretically in a pinch, and you could sell it fairly quickly as well. I don't think most people want to take that loss to do that. but you could. So if price moves up, you might see unstaking happen and you might see people sell. That's quite a possibility. And then, like, you have, you know, there's some Luna left in the community pool, but that's not included in the circulating supply. But it is in the total supply. Part of the circulating supply, in theory, is what is the, or and I'm sorry, you have TFL's pool, which is fairly large, Terraform Labs. I don't remember what the exact percentage is, but it's pretty big. And you see that, like, there was a Project Dawn that they were, you know, that they have going on where, like, 3 million token. I don't remember what the exact numbers are, so don't quote me on this. But there's a certain chunk of money of tokens of Luna that are being, like, put into circulating supply to spend on TFL-related projects. They haven't specifically said what all those projects are, whether that's, like, paying, you know, staff, or whether that is you know, building infrastructure or paying for more nodes or something. But that's not been made fully clear, but TFL has made it clear that they're going to be clearing some of those tokens. Now, fortunately, because of the efforts of Doe and others, like, basically the amount of Luna that's being burned is far in excess of the amount that they're putting onto the market. So that's good news for us. But just be aware that there is a sizable chunk of TFL pool that, you know, there's not a clear story of where that is going. So if you were to ask, like, what is the biggest dumping pool available, it's clearly the TFL pool. You know, there's some sizable wallets, like, in the form of founders like Doe and others that, like, theoretically someone could, you know, sell. So just that's something always to be aware of. Doe did mention, like, back at TFI, that that he might, if there's some kind of issue with centralization of Terra or some kind of regulatory conflict that would emerge, that, like, TFL does have the option of just simply destroying all of their Luna, not converting it to UST, but just destroying it outright. And, like, that would basically promote decentralization, but it would eliminate any kind of, like, war chest on the part of TFL. And so there's different... So I don't know the pros and cons of that. Only those questions.
Yeah, but the thing is, TFL distribution of Genesis only had 10%, which amounts for 100 million. Right. But if we do the difference between total supply and circulating supply, we get to 400 million. So who oversees the emission schedule of those other 200 million?
I don't, and we'd have to ask SmartStake how they come up with their numbers. Like, if SmartStake was here, it would be like, they'd be able to make it more clear. Let me see if any of the folks here that want to raise their hand that know the exact numbers, feel free to sort of like ask for speaker requests, and if someone has precise expertise. But yeah, I see what you're talking about. You're just talking about, like, where is the discrepancy in the various numbers and what are the different ways?
No, because what happened in November when the 90 millions of Luna were emitted to create the Ozone fund, those were decided to be emitted on the market and then burned just for this purpose, which means that...
Right, but the community pool has very little left in it now.
Right, but that's once again open to the fact that the difference between the circulating and the total supply is still there available to be emitted on the market, and this will actually counterbalance the burning. So if those 400 million are released, are emitted, I don't know, 100 million every year, then that will go to increase the supply.
What is the staked portion right now? Do you have
that? Yeah, number? It's just the difference between the total supply and the circulating supply, which is basically 400.
Right. But what I'm saying is, but the staked supply, any of us can sell at any time, right?
Well, the staked supply is part of the circulating supply. Is within the circulating supply, right? Is because circulating supply is divided in liquid supply and staked supply. So while the total supply is different. Am I correct in this?
I don't think you're correct. So the circulating supply has actually taken out the stake supply already. So the circulating is just like just purely Luna out in the open without this unstaked. Yeah, Kaj is here. Maybe Kaj knows the exact answer you're trying to get to.
I wouldn't say I know the exact answer, but from what I understand, I thought everything was held at TFL, like the difference. I thought TFL had like 300 million Luna or something.
Yeah, TFL's got a lot of Luna. I don't remember. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's a sizable.
Because like the way I understood it is you have the total circulating supply, which includes everything, and then you have the liquids or the circulating supply, which is the staked and the liquid Luna, and then the difference in between there, I thought, was what TFL held, and I thought Doe said that they're going to use what they need to build out USD and the ecosystem. And then when it's time for TFL to dissolve, they're going to burn what's left. But
yeah, like keep in mind, it doesn't make sense for TFL to sort of just dump on the market because like Doe himself has, for example, a large quantity of Luna, right? Like he's probably a Luna billionaire or whatever at this moment.
I think he has 100 million or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so exactly. So he's got a shit ton of Luna. So like, yeah, it's not incentivized in such a way. To where like there's an obvious reason to be like dumping inordinate amounts, but it is a common complaint among everything from like you know anti-centralization people like Bitcoiners to like you know people that are looking at tokenomics. They're like, hey, wait a minute, Luna's still fairly centralized as far as token supply, and yeah, that's something he's certainly verbally addressed, like you know basically. We take him at his word for that, but yeah, it's like there is possibility of more tokens coming onto the market for sure. I think most of us are happy as long as the overall like burn rate utilization and like, you know, expansion of the systems is far in excess of those rates. It probably is okay. But anyway,
yeah, I mean, it is just the Doe's word, I guess, that we're taking for it. But like the way I understand it is they have the money and it's there to be used in case it's needed, like for Project Dawn, for example. And if it's not needed, then by the time Luna is ready to be completely decentralized and no more TFL, then they just burn what's left to a dead wallet.
Yeah, I mean, like an argument might be made to kind of like quiet naysayers would be like an auto destruction schedule of the Luna that's in their pool, right? Like so that might be a way to alleviate people's concerns about this problem. So like they just smart contracted to destroy Luna as its price rises or something, you know. So they make a decision, okay, this is how much we think we might need to as a like war chest or what have you, and then after that it just burns the rest like as we go. But I don't know, that's just a theory of mine. I have no idea what they're going to do. DP, any question, or Kaj, do you any more comments or questions?
I just wanted lately to say that like I it's funny because like people who've been in this community for a long time and have just seen how Doe and TFL work, like we've all kind of like accepted the fact that they're just, their goal is to make UST the number one currency, and like we're not too worried about them dumping. It just doesn't, it feels like it's so out of character. It just wouldn't make any sense. But if you're new and you're just looking into the project, right, then like, yeah, definitely. I can understand why it makes you a bit nervous.
Yeah. Like if you don't know if you haven't been here for very long, I think it's more likely you're going to really, you know, question people's intentions or whatever, as people should. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like you just develop confidence over these things theoretically over time. DP, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good.
So I have some spare UST kicking around, and I'm just wondering what's the best way to utilize that. So I know there's Anchor Protocol, of course. I've kind of looked into Apollo as well. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You mean just buying the coin outright, or what do you mean?
So I have like 200-300 UST, right? So I bought the UST, The Luna, I already have okay. that bonding itself, so I don't want to, I'm not going to be using the Luna to go into like liquidity pools. I just want to use the USD by itself.
But like, so one of the things to keep in mind for everybody about the Terra ecosystem is, you'll notice it creates it. There are a huge variety of exposures that access to. That's what's powerful about it. So the base yield is considered the USD 20% anchor, as you mentioned. And then if you're like, well, I want to take on, say, for example, more risk than that, which is essentially what you're doing when you're doing anything else, especially like short-term time price exposure risk, then you just really have to ask yourself, okay, like, what is my goal? And like, what is my time horizon? And what type of things do I want to get into? So for example, if all I wanted to do is do something simple and buy, like, just for example, I wanted mirrored Apple stock because I think Apple stock is going to go up, I don't even have to be exposed to the, you know, any impermanent loss or whatever of the LP position in Mirror, for example. I could just buy the Apple mirrored Apple and just kind of like, you know, watch it go up for a few years or something. So I think it really just depends on what you're trying to achieve. As people get a little bit more comfortable with, say, liquidity provider positions or initial coin offerings and whatnot, I think, like, you know, people tend to jump into those things. If I had a, you know, like, you know, a few hundred bucks and I just wanted to like optimize it, I think, well, one of the questions I would ask you is, how much time are you talking about? Like, you're looking at parking it there for years or for a month, or like, what's your thinking?
Yeah, so I'm like, my plan is just to keep there for like a few years, just see where it goes. This is just spare money on the side that I have. I don't really plan on buying any crypto with it. Like I said, I'm bonding my Luna right now, so I don't want to be doing anything else with that. So the UST, I just want to park it somewhere, kind of just let it ride for a few years. I am willing to take a higher risk to see where it goes. That's why I'm kind of looking at options outside.
Yeah, if you're talking about a, like, based on what you're saying, I might just do personally, like, if it's a multi-year approach, I might just get some Luna and throw it in Stator and Auto Compounder and call it a day. That might be sort of like, you don't have to do any real serious research at this point. Like, Luna's proven itself and it's, you know, it'll probably do plenty of price action and gain over the next several years and whatever is my suspicion. That would be a simple thing to do. If you want to get into something non-Luna, like, you know, and you have plenty of time on your hands, like I said before, those pylon gateways are really pretty reasonable because you're getting like basically initial coin prices. You get your UST back at the end of the gateway anyway, so you're not really risking that. But it may not be as efficient as maybe, like, for example, White Whale's new IDO that's coming out. There's going to be like an auction style system of some kind where, you know, you can buy their coin and then like ride it out for the next few years or something. So I think it just depends. Like, if you're looking for an initial coin offering type of thing, if you're looking at just Luna, you're looking at an LP or just some anchor yield, plenty of options. And even Mirror is another one. So what the ecosystem offers, if anything, is it offers lots of different styles of price exposure, depending on your personal time horizon and your personal, like, you know, growth theory in terms of requirements. Like, for example, if I go buy mirrored Apple, like, maybe it'll double, let's say, in, I don't know, a year or two, because it's kind of like a huge tech blue chip. But, you know, it's not going to 10x on me, more than likely, right? So I think it just depends on what you're trying to get. But if I was going small and I'm relatively young, you know, and I just want like some moonshot things that my $100 becomes, you know, $10,000, which is what I would be looking for, quite honestly. Like, if I have smaller amounts of money to play and I just want like massive price action, then I would go for the things that are going to like really 10x. So I would be looking at probably the initial offerings of some of the blue chip folks. Like, Astroport's a little bit more complex, by the way, for people, because Astroport's meant to reward that. This is what Macedo said yesterday. It's really the tokenomics is meant to reward not just community members that maybe want the Astro token, but it rewards absolutely the most the people that actually participate in the liquidity provider positions and hold the Astro token. So you guys should be aware of that. So if I wanted just some coin that like just accrued value based on the value of that system, something like White Whale or Prism actually might have like cleaner tokenomics for someone who's not participating in all those background LPs and stuff. So something to mention, I forgot to mention earlier, that probably is relevant to people. So if you're going to be an LP provider, a liquidity provider, like in AstroPort, then the token makes a whole lot of sense the way he described the tokenomics. There's a lot of advantages to holding that coin. Otherwise, maybe pick coins that are accrue value automatically. Stator's community farm right now you might want to look into also. That's where you just take Luna, you park it in their community farm, and it takes, like, it farms their token for the next few months or whatever, using the Luna yields. And Stator's token probably will, again, another one of those that'll go on the market at some point, and then price discovery, and it'll probably do it another 5 or 10x pretty easily. So that's what's been the history of those initial coin offerings. So you might want to look into that. That requires being in Luna to participate. But then you get the price action of Luna, and you get the benefit of like farming the Stator token. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. So I got to kind of look into Stator. I've kind of heard about it, but I haven't researched too much. So my question is, like, is there a vesting period, like over maybe 6 months or like a year? So how does it work on Stator when you're locking up your tokens?
I think the community farm right now is like a several month thing. Like, yeah, look at that carefully. I just threw some Luna at it and wasn't paying that close attention. But yeah, there is a time period where it locks your Luna if you go that route. And I don't remember. It's a number of months until I think all the Stator tokens are mined, or essentially not mined, but like farmed. So yeah, take a peek at that.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Yeah, sure. Luna Larry?
Hi. Hi.
Hey.
Yeah. Lunatic all the way from the Philippines here. I just want to say congrats to us for finally flipping Doge and entering the top 10. My question...
Oh, shit. Did we do it?
Yeah. We finally did it at 69 on the list. So I just wanted to ask about Anchor Protocol, which is actually... the biggest protocol now in Luna, in which a lot of other projects are hinged on, such as Nexus, Kujira, and a lot of others coming up, like Cash and Alice. So the question is really about the interest rate of 19.5, 20%. That's been consistent for months now, and I believe before it used to be much higher. I wanted to ask if the interest rate is something that is managed purely by TFL, or if there are other factors involved in deciding what the interest rate is.
That's a good question. I'm not 100% sure if it's totally algorithmic, or whether that is like manually adjusted according to their projections in terms of revenues and such. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that actually. Like you said, it used to be like an exact 20%, and it has also been slightly higher in the past as well, like 21%. I'm not 100% sure what dictates that. Maybe like the total participation or some other elements. Because even when the pool of reserve was rising, the interest rate didn't necessarily go higher as a consequence of that over the last few months. So, yeah, good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, because I've been trying to onboard a lot of other people into the Terra DeFi space, but I think their only worry is that investing in Anchor with the 20% returns isn't going to be forever. And as a follow-up,
but even if it wasn't forever, what you should just tell people is like there's almost no place in the universe they're getting 20%.
Exactly my point.
So the first thing is, like, even if you're making 10% in theory, crypto stablecoin yields, if you look at various platforms, like I don't know, like BlockFi and Celsius and Voyager and this and that, the general rate comes in at around 10 to 14%, somewhere in that neighborhood. 9 to 14%, and how long those are going to last is not fully clear either. But the way to look at it is, as long as you can get close to 20%, get it, right? Like, and if it doesn't last and you want to do something else with your money, like, big deal, right? It's not like you lose your money because the interest rate goes down. All you have to do is then move your money out and do something else with it, right? So there's not really a risk from that perspective at all. The worst that could happen is the interest yield drops and, you know, people take their money elsewhere. But even if it was like 16%, 15%, 14%,
and would you also know? Would you also know how often does it happen on a daily basis?
Does what happen? I missed that. Your voice broke up. Sorry.
Core protocol. Does it happen on a daily?
Your voice is kind of jumping in and out. But I think you're saying, does it recalculate that on a daily basis? I'm not sure I follow, but. Yeah, as far as the mechanics of exactly how those interest rates are determined, I'm not 100% sure, like, what elements make them vary on a moment-to-moment basis. So, but yeah, thanks for the question. But your voice is kind of breaking up, so I'll kind of, like, jump to a different question, I think, from somebody else. Michael, are you there?
Yeah, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I have a couple of questions. The first one would be regarding Astroport and the Nexus. Since Astroport, the lock drop will be from the 6th to the 12th, right? The first lock drop. And as you know, the Nexus token release is at the 12th, I think. So you said you will be moving your Nexus, your Psi tokens to the Astro pools. Are you not worried about the token release and that maybe wrecking your LP position in the Astro?
Well, like the Psi that I already have is sort of like I already have it. And it's some of it's already LP'd. So I don't know that I'm going to be exposing myself to any more risk than I would have already had, I suppose, in my example. But like, if you are concerned about that from the angle of like buying Psi today, you know, one option would be to enter the Astroport pool after that date, I suppose. I don't know. I don't remember, like, is there a limiting period where you can't participate in Astroport? Is there a date after which it's all locked up or what?
You know? I'm not sure. The phase two starts after phase one, right? So I think it's basically the same. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure. But yeah, that could be a factor if you're buying Psi today to enter that pool. You know, you should be prepared for the possibility of the token to drop in price. What he's referring to is there's like some token unlocks happening on December 12th that people have talked about that maybe the Psi token will go down during that time. You know, an option would be like maybe a way to mitigate that would be, let's say I entered an LP with some Psi and UST and just went ahead and did it for the express purposes of getting some Astroport. Then what I could do is if the Psi token drops, like what I might do, I'm not saying you guys should do it necessarily, is I might go and like get double the amount of Psi token when it drops and just take that Psi and just park it in governance or something. That way, when the price goes back up, I have the price exposure at a cheaper price and it's going to compensate for all of this mess in the first place. So I think that would be a way to both participate, but just take a half risk measure.
Yeah, interesting.
Maybe. Yeah, so there's different ways to look at it. Because if you look at how I normally invest, like I usually just go logarithmically bigger on drops. And you're going to get the most, like you want the, like let's say something drops like 75%, 80%. Like that's maybe not a good time to get into an LP. It makes more sense to just simply get the coin and hold it. Because in theory, in my mind, like you are at the lowest price with the highest possible price appreciation after like a 70 or 80% correction in crypto. And when that, look what's happened to Psi's price. Like it went from 0.45 and then it went down to like, I think 0.07 or something. And then, or whatever the numbers were. And then it started to climb again. But had you got it at the bottom as another LP position, you would have suffered impermanent loss on the way up again, as opposed to if I just simply bought the token, which is exactly what I did. Then now, like the token that I bought or the token that I earned in my N Luna vault, all of that went up. And so now I'm breaking even much, much faster. And then, like, I could theoretically, once it's made some gains, I could put it in LP again at that point if I really, really wanted the emission rewards. So it really depends on your time horizon and what you're trying to achieve with LPs. That's the trick. And playing the LP, there's people that are much better at that than I am, for sure. Like, as far as LPs, like, I think Danku has, like, a little bit more intuition about how to enter and exit those things than I might. So, certainly something to ask him about. If, like, it'd be good if he did, like, a general strategy session of what he does when, like, price falls on something that he LPs, and, like, how does he, like, manage that in terms of either, like, what does he buy, what does he do? People that really do a lot of LPs, it'd probably be worth having a conversation with somebody that's, like, a
that. Yeah, that would be interesting, sure.
I probably Jose would be a good one to have this conversation with again, but, like, what are his tactics for LPs? Because he probably would know everything.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for answering that question. I have a second one, though. It's regarding the opportunity cost of Stator. Since I don't really have a lot of Luna, and I want to take part in Stator, though. So what do you think about the opportunity cost in staking my Luna there? And also, there's like a liquid staking, I think, coming out, right, with the Luna X or something?
Yes.
And basically, right now, we cannot use the Luna X for anything, right? Like, we cannot stake it in it. We cannot LP.
Correct, yeah. You can't use your Luna X for anything yet. That's all kind of coming. So, like, number one, the first question is, like, A, are you the type of person that wants to sell their Luna ever?
No.
Or are you the type of person that wants to hold your Luna forever?
Yes, correct. I will hold forever.
You're more of a hold forever. Okay, that makes sense. So, like, because you have to know that first, because obviously if you're locking in to 21 days, any kind of staking-related situation, the first question is, like, do you want to be able to have that liquidity to sell if you need to? If the answer is no, like, you're perfectly fine with locking it in something, you just want to maximize earnings, then right now, like, the Stator community farm makes total sense, because it's, like, it's almost like no matter what price Stator you're getting it at right now, it's almost certainly going to go up from there. It's like an up-only situation. You know, the odds that you're going to do better farming the Stator token than had they given you the option of just farming Luna like normal, like auto-compounding, you're almost certainly going to do better with the Stator token, I'm guessing, right? Because the moment you list on exchanges, it's just going to, you know, pop for whatever reason.
The thing is,
I think, like, if you were to ask me, like, the number one use of Luna right now, if I was going to just simply park it somewhere to earn, I think the Stator community farm is, I'm going to bet me, like, I'm personally thinking that's going to coin that you're going to be able to farm right now with self. Now, the flip side to that would be the Luna bonded Luna pair for Astroport would be a very decent option as well. Those are probably your two, like, best Luna deployment options right now.
Okay, but regarding the opportunity cost, because, like, of Mars coming out and other very interesting protocols coming out, so I was thinking,
sure,
because of the borrow potential from Anchor, right? If I'm not maybe losing, maybe, like, out on some rewards by, like, locking up.
Yeah, I've thought of this fairly carefully too. What I might do actually, and you know, I might end up, like, buying the top of Luna to do this. Is one thing I was thinking the same thing, because if I borrow off my Luna, number one, it's almost free anyway. I'm getting Anchor tokens for it. Those Anchor tokens that I get, I can then, like, farm more Astroport in theory. And then I could stake my Anchor and make that yield. So my overall, cost to borrow is going to be low. And then if I keep my borrowing capability large, instead of just simply taking Luna, like you said, and dumping it into Stator, maybe it's better if I just simply buy Luna at whatever price it's at and just dump it in Stator. Right? Because in other words, if I don't really care, like, I'm going to hold Luna forever anyway. Finding a perfect price may not be as important as farming a coin that's going to 10x either way, right? Yeah. So maybe what you're saying is correct. Like, you know, I've been grappling with this exact question myself. Do I burn? Because I have Lunas coming from B-Luna to Luna to burn that are coming out of a burn, but how to redeploy those, whether it's in, like, a Luna B-Luna pool or just convert it all to B-Luna on a nice swap and make 2% or whatever, 1 to 2%, and then dump it in back into Anchor and then borrow off it and then buy a bunch of shit? Yeah, like I'm divided the same way as you are. What's the better opportunity cost? I don't know for sure. What I do know with near certainty is almost no matter what we're talking about here is probably going to be, no matter what we do is going to be more lucrative than the cost to borrow, right? Like, so the idea that like our expenses are going to be low to borrow either way. And I think we're going to get ahead almost assuredly one way or the other, but which one's going to make us rich quickest is going to be so hard to optimize for sure. Cause you and me, neither you and me don't know, like, is it Prism or White Whale's token or Stater's token? Which one's going to have the highest gain? We have no idea.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
So we don't know for sure either way, which is why, like, I think my sensibility is I'm probably just going to participate in all of them only to, like, one is, like, to just diversify into them. So, like, if one project fails or something, then my risk is lower, but maybe to sort of, like, understand all the systems, I'm going to have, like, skin in the game if I play in all of them. So that's, I don't know. That's my sense on it. I don't know what the right answer is going to be.
Yeah, interesting for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, so certainly someone who guesses the right one that's going to like do the best is going to get richer than I am. Like, you know, there's a bit of a lottery involved, like in terms of which one's going to do the quote unquote best. So that's yeah. My feeling.
Last question though, do you know like any protocol that is planning to implement the Luna X, or like is there anything built upon regarding Luna X, or do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I think the immediate issues are to be able to have trading pairs with Luna X on Astroport. So you might be able to create like a pool of like B Luna slash you might be able to get into a pool like a bonded Luna trading against Luna X, for example, which could be pretty cool. I was interested in like an AUST versus Liquid Luna like LP, because that way both sides of the LP are rising in value over the year, which would mitigate some of the impermanent loss of rising Luna versus UST as an example. So that might be pretty cool. I'm looking for Liquid Luna to be something that can be used on Anchor Protocol to immediately borrow, so that if I'm not borrowing, it's already auto compounding. But if I am borrowing, it can be used immediately without all these swapping mechanisms. So that could be pretty cool. There's like so many interesting, ways to ultimately make liquid staked Luna very interesting. And tradable and transferable to people and possibly usable on as primitives for additional platforms for yield redirection and such. All of this is sort of, I think, you just have to give Stater time to like build it correctly.
All right. Thank you very much.
Cool. Josh, you there?
You're all right. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
What's up?
It's kind of like similar to what Mark was saying. Last couple of weeks been using Anchor, and I was just wondering what's the best way to kind of utilize the borrowing.
What would you like to do with the borrowed money? I guess would be the first question.
Well, it's
for you.
I was thinking of just building up a Luna because I was listening to one of your spaces the other day, and you were saying about just like building as much Luna as you can. And I want to kind of do that with what I've got in the Anchor borrowing.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you what, well, like I've said before, like what I tend to do is, this is just me, I tend to, like, when Luna drops a substantial amount is when I start borrowing against my Luna. And the reason I do that is because I don't want my LTV to go like, you know, it, like close to liquidation yeah. range. So I tend to manage my LTV fairly conservatively compared to some people. In other words, I don't want to be someone's like Kujira attack
yeah.
or whatever. so I don't want to be liquidated. I tend to stay kind of small. And then I borrow strategically where I feel like it's reasonably safe, get a little bit of Luna, maybe bond it, because I can, because as soon as you go from Luna to bonded Luna, especially on days when there's that like 1 or 2% like difference, you can get some discounted free Luna anyway. That might be a way to do it. One way to use your borrowed money would be to just simply park it on Kujira so you can get a better deal on your Luna. So like maybe select a 3 or 4% discount on Kujira and just wait for a dump and then let that take care of it for you. That's a pretty cool way to
do
it.
Yeah, that's how I started with my on my Anchor borrowing. I put it through Kujira.
Yeah.
And then with the bonded, I just started borrowing it.
My phone is cut right. Yeah, one thing I was interested in seeing was, like, ultimately Kujira offering the ability to park your money there as AUST instead of UST, so that, like, your UST is earning something while it's sitting there. Because, like, you don't know how long it's going to take, right, for Kujira to trigger. That would be kind of cool, potentially, because then you're, like, in a low-risk yield-earning position, which then can be deployed as needed. So that would be kind of cool. That's probably what I would do if I was starting small is, like, you know, what I did all year was mostly first focus on the acquisition of sufficient Luna so I have sufficient borrowing power to do cool shit with it. And that generally has worked out well for me. Is that the right thing to do right now with all these IDOs coming out where you might be able to get good gains on some of these new coins? It might not be the right thing. So in other words, you might do much better on like a new coin offering related process than you would necessarily just getting more Luna.
Yeah.
Now, like, you know, for starters, like my general sort of philosophical point on, well, not phil, but like my target price for me for where Luna is going to be like by the end of next year is like readily into the $1,000 range. So that's my general feeling of where that's going. And so when I'm thinking of other coins and things, I'm looking at them from that perspective. And I'm willing to wait for my Luna to get to that price. So when I think about opportunity costs, like the other gentleman was asking, as far as like which is going to be the better outcome, you know, I weigh it against the outcome of a reasonable probability that Luna has like another good 20x ahead of it. I mean, even more than 20x is possible, but in a timely manner, like in a year and a half. I think heading past $1,000 is fairly straightforward, like between the tokenomics and all the other elements. So I just weigh that. And if you think to yourself, well, okay, like what is my Luna going to be worth? Like, do I need to even be doing all these other shenanigans? If I'm kind of new to this, and I don't know what I'm doing, I would first and foremost learn how to get more Luna at the very most efficient way possible. And then when you're Luna rich, you know, a year from now or 2 years from now, and don't think for a second that there aren't going to be new ICOs and other shit coming out, right? It's crypto. There's always something happening. So the idea that you're not going to be able to, like, you know, find some neat little projects that you can 100x later using small amounts of borrow capacity, to me, like, having that, like, capital borrow capacity and building that is probably one of my first steps. And now I'm able to use that because I have a lot of borrow capacity that's built up.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But if I'm new, like if I was starting fresh today, like what am I telling my friends? I'm not telling them to get into every IDO. What I've been telling them to do is grab yourself some Luna, and then you tell me, like, are you planning on spending a whole lot of time, you know, fucking around with this, like, you know, playing on Kujira and doing this and that, or do you just want to fire and forget? And I just tell them to just stater it and call it a day. Because, like, if I'm telling a friend who knows nothing, and I reasonably believe that within a year or two that Luna could be about $1,000, which is 20x, most of my normie friends or whatever care less about all the other details, right? Like, a 10 or 20x to them is pretty damn good. That's a great gain no matter how you look at it, right? You know, I look at it from that perspective. I feel comfortable telling them that's a reasonable target over that time frame, and just stick in the auto compounder, and you're going to be, like, getting a bunch of free Luna anyway.
Cool. Yeah. No. I was just. Just like an example. Would you recommend with the bonded Luna I got? So say if when it went to £100, would you then?
Okay.
Would you just trying to find like the tactics? Would you then pay off the rest of what you loaned? Wait for it to drop down, then borrow again. Is that a way of doing it?
So far, I haven't paid back anything.
Okay.
And the reason is because I think, like, the Luna's worth more holding it than any kind of interest that's going to accrue over the next year. So let's say, worst case scenario, the interest rate to borrow was 20% and, like, Anchor was, like, not even a thing. The Anchor rewards were gone. Let's just take an example. Yeah. Then, you know, the worst case scenario is I'm paying 20% to borrow. And the best case scenario is that I believe that Luna is going to do, like, a, you know, 10x or 20x. Like, there's just, the math doesn't make sense to pay off that borrow.
Yeah, okay.
Like, it just doesn't. So it just depends on what your conviction is and, like, what, you know, how you feel about borrowing. But right now with the Anchor rewards, like, the borrow cost is like, what, 1 or 2%? It's like, it's almost nothing. So sometimes I feel stupid for not having just, like, just gone crazy and just use the max borrow capacity. Like, I have a lot of excess borrow capacity that I'm not using that I shuffle around and mess with. It makes me sort of comfortable, but did I fuck up badly by not using it all? Yes, I fucked up really badly. Like, I would have way more money had I just simply used my Anchor bar to its maximum right now. I would have, like, probably triple what I have now, like, just as a reference, like 300% difference probably. So, you know, what, but then, you know, I feel comfortable, like, sleeping at night. If, like, let's say, for example, Luna heads off and does a good, like, 120, 130, and then, like, it dips again, you know, at some point, you know, like, it takes 20, 30, 40% dips. I like the predictability of a massive impulse move in price upwards. You find some kind of top, and then as the price is falling 10, 20, 30, 40% or something like that, then I feel more comfortable personally borrowing because I know that Luna has the capability of reaching that high, right? So once I've confirmed that a high is possible and a retracement is simply just, like, you know, just normal, just profit taking, but you know all those people may jump back into their Luna at a lower price and just drive the price back up again at some point, right? Like, so, you know, judging by the ecosystem and where things are going, I like to just kind of, like, use my borrow power during those dip periods. Is it the most lucrative thing to do? And are some of the people here, like, way richer than me because they're more aggressive? I'm sure they are, right? Like, okay. But that's kind of my way to do it. And you know, even if the price goes way up, you know, I could borrow in strategic amounts, like, and buy things that are, you know, cheap, whatever they are, other coins, either on KuCoin or on some other exchanges. I don't have to use my borrow right here, right now, only for Luna, right? So, because sometimes you'll find a coin that's already retraced, like, you know, 50% or something, right? Like I know everyone makes fun of Cardano, but I could care less about what it does, but they have a huge number of people that, like, are, you know, that buy it, right? So it went to, like, $1.50 or $1.45 or something, and I got some. Because it's at low risk at that point to me. I don't give a shit what it does. As long as it goes up and I can sell it and I can basically get the yield off of that arbitrage, I might as well just trade it, right? So, like, it doesn't have to be necessarily, like, buy and sell Luna to buy more Luna. You can buy and sell a whole lot of shit to buy more Luna. So I'm always looking for some discount somewhere in the market, not necessarily, like, not always necessarily in Terra. Although I generally prefer to buy coins that I don't mind being a bag holder on. That's my general rule.
Why, isn't it? So you're saying, like, when the LTV goes down, just borrow, maybe convert back to the UST to bonded Luna and then put it back in and then let the LTV drop? Is that a...
Yeah, you can also manage your LTV by moving your... Like, let's say, for example, your LTV is too low, like it's down to 20% because your Luna price went up so much. You could then, like, just remove the bonded Luna from there if you don't notice a good borrowing opportunity at that moment, and you can then, like, go and burn it and then get, like, 2% free Luna again or something, right? Like, so, because you can do the Terra swap or something like that. Yeah. So there's a lot of opportunities, like, in between where you don't have to necessarily borrow to make a few percentage points here and there.
Cool. Right. Yeah, I'll just try to speed up as much Luna as I can now.
Yeah, I think the key is, like, for people not to underestimate what, like, a 1% or 2% instantaneous risk-free gain actually is. It's a lot. That's a lot of gain. Like, for a 21 day period, I mean, shit, like, you know, that's really good. So that your money magnifies very fast over a period of, like, a year or two or three. So if you just have, like, a longer time frame, like, you can come up with some. your strategies are much better over a 4 or 5 year time frame than they are over like, oh, I want to get rich instantaneously. I know all of us like to brag if like something went up a lot after we bought it, but the reality is like you have to be prepared for that moment, right? Like you that it's worth, like you have to have the capital ready at that moment. And if you already have a lot of money, it's going to be a lot easier to do that.
Yeah.
So you're preparing for the day when you can, you're preparing for the day when like you're rich enough to do that shit, not necessarily to try to do something instant, get rich quick now. That's a better like mindset to, is what I think. But anyway.
Yeah. I might be able to do well my other round.
Yeah, let me grab Anisha's. I'm sorry, John's question here. And I had somebody else waiting, but I guess had to drop off. So if I missed you, feel free to re-request. I'll get you back on. John, go ahead.
Hi there. Hi, C-Fi. Basically,
hey, go ahead. I think your voice broke up a little bit, but try again. Yeah.
Yeah, so we were talking a few minutes about when a coin goes down 90%, it makes sense just to hold that coin instead of staking it. I think a good example of that is VKR. I wanted to see your take on VKR and Valkyrie Protocol and see what your opinion is on that one. Thanks.
I mean, like, to get the coin and stake it, or, like, what are you trying to do there?
Just VKR protocol in general. I mean, the coin went down heavily. I think it went through an 80% drop. It was like at point. It used to be at around 3. Now it's trading at 0.2.
On small project like that, that sort of pumps and then drops, you know, like I might throw small amounts of money at these types of things after they've pulled back like that. And then just sort of stake it and sort of see what happens. I think it depends on how you feel about like the team's execution and the implementation of their rewards program and seeing them actually do stuff. I think one of the complaints people have had is that like there haven't been that many like integrations with that system that have come out regarding some of the new protocols coming out. Like if the number one use case for Valkyrie might be for other projects on chain to use them as opposed to some external user, we haven't seen a whole lot of things coming out where there are partnerships that tie in with them. So I don't really know. I think that's probably more of a direct question to them to see, like, build confidence in what that team is doing. It's almost like, you know, they need to do like an AMA or something and have a discussion about what their projects they're building up on to build confidence in whether it's worth investing in those things or not. I don't really know. Like the APYs and all those shenanigans, like I would try to generally ignore a lot of those things and like focus more on like the fundamentals on some of those.
Yeah.
In other words, anything you get involved with, like whatever the APY is, no matter what the like, you know, various Ponzinomics or whatever that go into it, like be sure that you're comfortable being a bag holder at any price for whatever it is you're buying, or prepare to sell low or something like that, right? Like, which makes no sense at all. So I think it's tricky with Wonderland. Those price pumps that happen. Yeah. Wonderland may have a lot of good things going for it, but that doesn't prevent it from dumping in coin price. Like, Luna went from like $22 to $5 bucks and $4 too. So it's not like that implies automatically it's a bad thing. A purely speculative price action, which is what crypto has, like you can expect 70 to 80% drops in things. And that's just normal. Like if people haven't like come to grips with that, they're going to make bad decisions with too much money.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's a constant issue in these type of spaces. They're not, I mean, but like it happens in traditional finance too. Like if you look at how like Coinbase stock pumped the moment it got listed, and you know, a bunch of the early investors probably sold out and made off like a bandits. And then the price jumps and everyone else has to ride the price down. And some people that wanted to get on the IPO because they're like, oh my God, I'm so bullish on Coinbase. They bought it at like literally the exact top and still haven't recovered. Maybe I don't know what their price is right now, but it's like it happens in those areas too. So I like all these new projects that are coming out with various fair launches. I think look at how projects are designing their launches, and that can help you a little bit and figure out what to do. There are different functions, these different phases of community launches and stuff. Like people complain that, well, too many like bots or too many people ninja bought all the stater in the first round. And then people are upset and then like not sure if the team is any good and stuff. A lot of like these teams, they might be really good at like what they do, but they may not be necessarily the end all be all masters in token launches and release schedules. So if you'd like caught some of what, Jose was saying yesterday about tokenomics and designing protocols, like clearly a lot goes into that shit. And it's not to say that a lot of like smaller projects are trying to be like bad projects. It's just like there's a learning curve that comes with designing new projects that if they don't have that history and that understanding, it's real. I'm like, any one of us could probably fuck up a token launch pretty badly. You know, we probably wouldn't do any better designing it than some of the teams that have done it now. So anyway, just all important things for people to think about. It is a resource issue. Yeah. Like, thanks. And it costs a lot to find people that are really, really experienced. So, hey Marty, what's 100%. Up? Marty, you know, Marty, like the winery is burning around you somewhere.
Now I also own a coffee shop. So I'm drinking my product here. So
we can barely hear you out there.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit, yeah. Try to answer.
Okay, so you didn't really talk about, you know, your level of borrowing. I've seen you post about it, that you're comfortable in the 40-43% kind of level. As am I. And you know, you and I probably have totally different strategies. You're definitely doing the inexpensive, Luna, and I'm doing the expensive Luna. But you said something there about 1-2%. Could you kind of elucidate a little bit more on that? Because that's, I think, how I view even buying expensive Luna. But go ahead, if you could elucidate on that some more.
Sure. And let me mute your mic for us because there's a lot of noise in the background. But what I was talking about with 1-2% is really just the Terra swap rate of converting converting Luna to bonded Luna. Periodically, the rates are somewhere between 1-2%, where your bonded Luna is cheaper. So, like, if I had 100 Luna and I swapped it on TerraSwap, I might get like 1 or 2 Luna free by going from Luna to bonded Luna. The only risk I take is the fact that like my bonded Luna would then have to be burned in Anchor Bond to free it up and turn it into regular Luna again. So it's like a staking position that takes me 21 days to clear, but it just by the quirk of like the TerraSwap difference, you can make a free percentage here and there is what I was alluding to there. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I think that's part of your buying Luna inexpensively. Is this better, by the way? I got rid of my headphones.
Yeah. So like what I oftentimes will do is if I see that like Luna's price has dropped, commonly what happens is when the price drops, there's also volatility in the Luna B Luna swap rate due to either liquidations or people converting their Luna suddenly to try to pay off loans or something. So because of the borrower shenanigans like that go on in there, like, you know, you get those discounts. So simultaneously at the, you know, and then do whatever I want with the bonded Luna, either burn it again to convert it back to Luna or maybe like provide it to borrow again or whatever. So it's just a matter of like periodically seeing that like opportunity and just taking it.
So one thing, another thing you said, basically was, you know, to have, I won't use the word cash, but to have the ability to buy additional Luna. And, you know, here on the Terra system, we're almost unique in the world of having a really easy way to do that through the ANC borrow capability. And, you know, we take it for granted at sometimes, but man, if you want to do something on Solana or Cosmos or whatever else, it's just not there. It's completely. So, you know, there's a really, really good thing. It might be interesting for people to listen to. I'll post it, which is, do you ever see the What Bitcoin Did podcast?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's an interview where the discussion is about digitization. And if you take Bitcoin and substitute it for, you know, kind of UST, ANC, / Luna, the unholy family, as I sometimes call it, it's actually a pretty good picture of the way we should think about the future. Anyway, thank you again for putting this together.
Yeah, no problem. Your voice kind of really cutting out there, so let me grab another person on here. Anish, I'm going to add you on here for a second. Anish, you there?
Hey, Seppi, sorry, just lost a little bit of reception there. Just a quick, well, firstly, thank you for hosting the space. Really, really informative and helpful. A lot of strategies that you've talked about on how to accumulate more Luna and wealth. And I've heard you say many times before, you know, trying to time the market is kind of foolish. You're better off, you know, holding and taking a long-term view. And makes a lot of sense. But you go to a hell of a lot of trouble to make the odd percent or two. And I'm interested to know why you wouldn't try and time the market, why you wouldn't try and, you know, look at a trade view chart and understand which FIB level has been hit and where you should be buying, where you should be selling, because those would be much bigger gains for you. So that's question one. And the second question is, do you believe that there will be a bear market, like in you know, in the next couple of months? Thanks.
Yeah, like, yeah, both good, like, common questions that probably everyone benefits from. So for starters, the you would think it's kind of funny that, like, the dude that posts a lot of charts doesn't actually talk about, like, selling and buying a lot based on those charts, right? Like, I have all these FIB extensions, and you saw what happened to Luna. It hit exactly the FIB extension at, like, 68, 69, and it starts seeing resistance, right? So could I have placed an order at $69, which is where it is now, to have sold it and then bought it back at 66? Sure, I guess it's possible. Now, those extensions are interesting in that sometimes market makers will just say, fuck you, and just go right through the actual extensions because they know that there's plenty of sellers there and they can just get their Luna for cheap. And they have, like, they have a seller pool they can just buy without extraordinary slippage. So sometimes in impulsive moves in the market, like, you'll just rip right through a FIB level. And if I'm in a situation like Luna's in now, where it's been an ascending channel, and then, like, each time it got to the top of that channel, it just failed to break out, and then now it finally did. The problem is, I don't know which of those times it's going to leave me behind, in which case I actually wind up with less Luna than I had before. And I just have to, like, chase it because it's, like, rising higher. Or the flip side would be you just exit some of your Luna in the market at those moments when those FIB levels get hit. And then, like, you find another opportunity with your money. In other words, don't chase if the price leaves you behind and sell some of it. So you're right in that, like, you could theoretically use all of that to trade your way to potentially, quote unquote, more wealth. I think the problem is like, you know, some just make money doing that because they fuck it up somehow. So I think, in other words, if I find that my confidence is plus or minus in how much money I can make, and I'm like trying to eke out a few percentage points here and there, you should think of that very carefully, because I've been at this a very long time. And if it was so easy to just simply like just multiply my gains every 5 minutes, like, you know, wouldn't I just simply be doing that? I think if you look at how crypto moves, you know, it's very heavily like, I think Sheldon Evans did a little YouTube video about this recently, that it's very like sentiment driven. It's highly impulsive moves with very large gains over a very short number of weeks. And like, if you just simply like enter things before those massive moves, and you enter at times of serious retracements into different things, then, and you're always buying things that are like dropping at small quantities, then you can wind up getting very high gains, and maybe don't even have to exit those coins if you're so far in the green that you can just then ride it out for years, because if you wanted to sell, you always could. But if you don't need the money now, you can just let it ride perhaps. So I think trading versus investing is two very different things. And every time, by the way, like I could have done something like trading and I didn't. And then like, I could have like 10x my money and I didn't. Every single time that happens, you're going to be like, oh shit, I should have sold it, or I should have bought it, or I should have done more buying of it. I should have sold more of it. Like, you're never going to have like a perfect psychological outcome as far as like, you know, satiating your personal greed or whatever. So just, that's something to be aware of. Like, it doesn't matter how much you make, you'll simply say, well, I wish I would have like sold a little bit sooner, or like bought it, you know, whatever. So that's always going to be a factor. I think you just have to decide how you're going to play that. Some people decide to sell on the way up, you know, in some fractions. And then you have to decide, well, okay, what's your opportunity at that point? Like, now you sold, presumably for a gain, presumably you pay taxes or something, and you took that tax hit. And then you say to yourself, okay, like, what am I going to do with this money now? So now you have to research something else to put that in, or continue to buy again the same asset that you were interested in. So sometimes that works out well. And, you know, and even like, even if you're an ardent investor, maybe sell 5% or 10% and then see if you can, like, you know, get an entry point. Because sometimes even if you enter again, even 5% lower, you've done pretty well, right? So small quantities of money that you want to trade. So some people talk about that, where they keep a core position and then the rest of their money, they just trade a monkey around. It really depends on how much, how good you are at that, how useful you think like your charts and things are. It can be quite difficult. And when people start applying leverage and whatnot to their trades, you know, that now your confidence in your supposed charting theory starts to really break down to some extent. So what some people do is, let's say, you know, like, let's say, for example, they bought a coin at support and then they put a stop loss in and they took on leverage, then they're okay with it if they get liquidated. And then they'll try that again when the coin is at support again, and they'll try it yet again. And eventually, like, they'll get a win, but between the fees and the losses, you know, even with the stop loss, you're going to have like, you know, leveraged losses there. And like, as long as you can consistently make ahead of, you know, like maybe like a quarter of your bets are really big and they win, and like the other three quarters of your bets like are small losses, you may come out ahead, and you can sit around like making a life as a trader instead of bullshitting on stock twits like we're doing now. so like, I think it depends on the timing and how much time you have to spend sitting there watching all that stuff too, and how you want to manage your money and taxes and whatever. But you're right. Like, had I timed everything perfectly, would I have made way more money? Probably. But I don't know that I can do that. Now, what your other question was, what, like, one was about the question of trading philosophy, and the other
well,
was...
Well, yeah, thanks for that. And the second one was how that sort of fits with the upcoming bear market, or, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Just see, like, so, I mean, like, I get your point around, you know, trading dips, yeah. But, you know, a four-year halving cycle is a big event almost.
Yeah. I came to kind of an epiphany on this subject, like when I noticed how the tokenomics of Cosmos chains worked. And I'll tell you how like my thought process went. So the reason why like Atom has, I think it right now it's almost 12% interest rate and like 7% inflationary. The reason why they have inflationary yield is the theory of inflationary tokenomics is that you are punishing the person who's trading because the trading individual is not making that yield. So they already take the yield loss risk, and you're benefiting the person who's holding because the unlike like when the Fed prints money, you know, the saver gets screwed because inflation is net bad for the saver because it like devalues their money. When you're a saver in say Atom, like it makes no sense not to stake it because then you're not getting the benefit of the ecosystem that's automatically known inflationary, but the saver gets the benefit of the actual reward. And the reason why the interest rates are so high, and if you look at like Akash, which has like a 45% interest rate, or Polkadot, which is like the running like 13 to 14% or something like that, is they design that way so that like if you are a holder of Polkadot for, let's say, 5 years or 10 years, like most of the volatility has been like taken out of your risk because you're getting tokens that are like, let's say over a 10-year time frame with Atom, you're going to have like double the number of coins. So even if the price was 50% lower than when you bought it, you essentially have doubled your coin count and you're breaking even. Does that make sense? So like the way that they organized those tokenomics made me really think about that. And by the way, before those types of coins were available, like I might trade more aggressively, or before Anchor 20% yield was available, I might trade more aggressively. But what you're looking at opportunity cost is if you make a mistake trading, like whether it's in a bear market or some other like situation, then you're actually potentially losing not only the money that you did on the coin that you like sold at the wrong price, but you're also potentially losing the productive yield output of that coin forever, right? Like especially with Atom or Polkadot as an example. So you actually have to recalculate or recalibrate in your head the risk. Like imagine if you went to your job today and you gambled on your job and said, you know what, I'm going to take a gamble that I can trade the output, the productive output of my work. And I can basically try to like gamble, and my salary is going to be 20% higher if I gamble correctly by getting more shares of my like work or something, you know? And what would happen is if you fuck that up, then what would happen is like, oh, maybe your actual salary dropped by 20% or 10%, right? For the rest of, I don't know, the next 10 years, let's say. Then you'd really be thinking carefully about messing around and gambling with your work. If you think about what Web 3.0 is, Web 3.0 based coins like Luna and Atom and whatever are basically designed to mitigate your volatility risk by paying out a yield. If you go screw that up, then what you're doing is like, it's like going to your job and just basically gambling on your salary because you have a guaranteed output and now you're messing with that. That's changed my mind entirely about conceptually about the idea of trading, but also what made me so bullish for the next 10 years that we are in fact in a super cycle. Because if I'm thinking this way, then a lot of people that own, say, Cosmos and who own Polkadot, who own Luna, are thinking this way. It's not going to be just me. Like, if you have $1 million in Luna, right, and you've got a productive output of 100K a year, you're going to think very carefully about messing that up, right? Like, yeah, I would love to make that $10 million if I had $1 million and then turn that into, like, a yield that's $1 million a year. Sure, that'd be wonderful, but you would... There comes a point after which the math for most people, they're going to really be very, very careful with that at that point, right? So I think the yield-based mechanisms of the modern tokenomics, you really have to keep that all in mind in the equation of how much of a gamble you're willing to take with your essentially shares in a company that produces money, right? Not only that, but if you think about it from a different angle, think about it from a business person's angle. So you decide to go open up a McDonald's or Chick-fil-A or whatever restaurants you have in your area. So you decide to go and spend like several million dollars and you open a restaurant. Like, what is the yield output of that restaurant? And would you be willing to gamble getting two McDonald's instead of one by like gambling the output of the first McDonald's? In a business, you sort of do, because like if you take your productive output of your first McDonald's, you collateralize the value of your restaurant, and then you go buy another, you know, unit by borrowing off of your money. And then you take the productive value of that restaurant and you theoretically collateralize that. Then a bank is willing to give you a loan to buy another McDonald's, and you're betting on the bullishness of McDonald's and the productive output of it, right? You know, but if you use your money that you were going to use to buy the second McDonald's, and you use the money that was supposed to be used for advertising or some shit, I'm just making up some theory here, there are various opportunity costs that end up getting weighed in this process, right? So, like, think of Web 3.0 coins more like that, and think of them, I think, more long term, is a good general sense. If I'm gonna be trading, I'd rather be trading in a more mathematically perfect way than arbitrarily picking up a chart and hoping for the, like, I know what I'm doing with it. So that we've talked a bit about like grid bots and other strategies where you, like, you know, manage like robotically traded limit orders that help sort of like provide a yield off of your money that's different than, say, a LP yield, but is relatively low risk. So if you want a low risk way to put out a lot of yield out of a coin that's trading sideways, for example, a grid bot makes more sense. If you want a fire and forget strategy, an inflationary token like Atom or Polkadot or something like that makes more sense. Or the reason I like Luna a lot, and I've said this a million times, is that unlike all the other inflationary DeFi tokens, Luna's yield output is not inflationary. And therefore, Luna's scarcity continues to rise as the interest yield is paid out to you, the stakeholder. So you can legitimately expect Luna's token value, assuming its DeFi platform continues to gain, you can legitimately expect not only the highest token output, but some of the higher like non-inflationary yield outputs out there. So gambling with your Luna is like just gambling with one of the, like, imagine gambling with one of the coolest companies you could ever possibly own. And now you're just like just trading and monkeying around. Like, I would say 90% of people don't know what they were doing, like legitimately don't know what they're doing well enough to like really play that gamble very well and then succeed. I think there's people here that probably do it well. But I don't think, like, if I'm telling my friends how to buy Luna or how to utilize it, I would be trying to teach them trading at this point, given how many easy opportunities there are to make money in this space. Does that, Anish, cover that pretty well, or you see where my philosophy comes
from?
No,
I do. Thank you very much. It covers it really well. Thanks.
Cool. Yeah. It's just like I think it's a mindset that you have to sort of like think through before gambling too much.
One last small question. If you were advising your friends to buy Luna, would you tell them to buy it now? Would you tell them to buy it middle of next year?
Well, first of all, like, there is a friction to getting into the ecosystem. So there's the friction of, like, you know, learning how to use the wallet and this and that. I tell people to just like either get some UST and park it on Anchor, or just like learn to use the wallet, throw $100 at Luna or something, and just like, you know, figure it out first. Once they're in the ecosystem, then you can like coach them maybe on like, you know, get some that you're comfortable with, and maybe get more when it drops, and get even more when it drops more or something like that. So, you know, I just basically coach my friends as far as how to deal with the volatility. You know, don't worry about it. You know, it's not a stock. It, you know, just because it drops 50%, it's not going to zero, and all this kind of like whatever. The usual sort of like volatility talk. It's like, you know how like the, you know, your children, you're like, you know, okay, you know, like wear a condom or whatever. Like, there's like that talk. You need to have like a talk with people before you like tell them to go buy crypto and shit, and like inform them how to manage their volatility. If you don't know how to do that, you probably shouldn't be telling your friends to do anything. Just let them do their own shit. Cool. Otherwise, they're going to blame you when it drops, right? Like, so I sit them down and I'm like, this is what I do with volatility. This is how I buy these things. And, you know,
thanks again, Seppi.
Not just simply throw them into the lion's den or whatever.
Cool. So, cheers. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah, Jason, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Seppi? How's it going? Quick update. I just noticed we popped over 70 and we just flipped Doge. So congrats to everyone. Nice. That's we're now the 10th.
Yeah, congratulations, everyone.
10th biggest.
We can hopefully like surpass the worthless shit coins in front of us. Yeah. I still find it interesting that people think it's a good idea to own XRP. I can't for the life of me explain why it's worth what it's worth. Like why human beings individually would buy that. Like I have no idea. Like, can you explain that to me?
That was part one of a two-part Twitter space hosted by CeFi on Friday, December 3rd, 2021. If you want to check out part two, it'll be in the feed. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Kick it with these killer vibes, picky how my hero dies. I've had to cut away at least like a million ties. I've tried a million times, but can't seem to get it right. And the things that I've seen might shock your civilian eyes. Writing in the dead of night, fighting with my better half. Hiding all the pain behind my most bitter laugh. Living off the land, that's a dream my dinner has. Seems like a lot of work to get around a sinner tax. I may go out, I may go back, I made this route. I'll take the path, setting up my shop in this little tourist trap. I'm living simple in a world that's gotten too complex. I'm hitting 40 soon, looking for that context. Grateful every day they haven't dropped the bombs yet. Waiting for the time the devil shows up with my contract. The devil's always late and I ain't got no time to spare. If I don't find the final piece of mind, yo, then I don't care. You can't take it with you, there's no debating the issues. Becoming jaded, still waiting, concentrating the misuse. I like my life secluded, these cats are convoluted. Fooled into thinking the revolution will be won by humans. Like a bunch of hot dogs, got their tongues out drooling. School never taught us shit, so I'm homebrewing. Mind the rulers, the computers, one day make us lucid. Giving planet Earth the cure to this little nuisance. In life, don't slip and slide. Red Rider gets an eye. Overweight ghost riders all get an exercise. Just don't mess with my trying to get this paper stacked. A little bit of super glue is all this caper lacked. First, we got your neighbor hacked. Got in through the Wi-Fi. Made a few changes and we put the papers back. Be back later, gotta rearrange the server rack. Mitigate security behavior and then we attack. Laying out the plans are simple. We go through the front. I'm taking what I need and then let's take a lunch, y'all. I've got a hunch. These suckers, they never seen it coming. No one cares what you think. You ain't influencing nothing. I'm a student of music and other dynamic fluids. I'm moving through the gruesome routine of losing my coolness. Spending all day trying to find a tolerance. Dealing with these shitty little humans with no common sense. Terra Spaces.